Thank you very much, Paul. Imagine how quick 10 minutes goes here. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. I am net control operator for this Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net meets every Sunday night at 8 p.m., except, unfortunately, next Sunday night we're going to be on hiatus because it's the high holidays. We stay radio silent then. So, as always, want to remind people that if you have any questions and you can't get onto the technical net, or if you have any topics you want to hear discussed, or if you have any puzzles you want to share with me, or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a space report and mention it on the space net, you can reach us via email at mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If there are any articles that are mentioned or any interesting links I can come up with during this technical net, I will list them on my link page, which is roy.ac2gs.com. You just type in roy.ac2gs.com into your URL of your web browser, and that will bring you to my link page. As always, there's a chat room available. You can get to it by either going to Limark's webpage and going through their link, or you can just type the word chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. And as I often do, I am streaming this on the internet, so if you have any friends who don't have access to IRLP or EchoLink or what have you, they can just type into their browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give them the audio link. And as I always like to mention, MikeAC2NJI has archives of the technical net that go as far back as September 2006. So please check Mike's website one of these days and listen to some of the golden oldies. Let me drop for a second. Okay. The game plan for tonight is we will ask for any questions or topics for discussion. And we're not quite sure if Andy is going to be available for Andy's Corner. He is a little bit limited in his time tonight. So we'll find out when we run out of stuff to do otherwise, if he's available. If not, we'll just keep on going until around 10:15 approximately, when it will be time for Paul and his SpaceNet report. So that's the plan for tonight, guys, gals. If anyone has any questions or topics or comments for tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign. Once again, this is AC2GS, Roy, net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. And if anyone out there has any topics or comments or technical questions, now would be a great time to serve them up. Just give me your first name and your call sign.
WB2AHK.
Yes, Chet, recognized. Do you have a question or a comment tonight, Chet?
Yeah, maybe. I didn't hear anybody calling in, so I had something I was thinking about for maybe the past year or so about SDRs, computer-operated SDRs, where you could have kind of like a receiver, a wideband receiver, and with associated spectrum analyzers, all coming from a SDR that you can buy, maybe, you know, various places. But my question is, I bought one and I couldn't use it. There seems to be some lacking. You get the operating unit, you plug it into the computer, and you need software, I assume, someplace. And it's kind of complicated. It leaves out a lot of things. These things are cheap. You can buy them for $30, $40, and then you buy it, and then you don't know what to do with it if you never use such a device. So I'm just wondering if anybody knows one that's available for sale, that you plug it into the computer, and has everything in it, and within a magical 30 minutes, you got yourself an SDR wideband receiver. So maybe somebody knows which one to buy and where to buy it from without having to go wondering what to do with this thing that you put in your hand. Over.
Okay, Jeff. Software-defined radios are an interesting topic. I like them. My favorite radio at the shack is a Flex radio. It's a 6700. It has two hardware-based radio receivers, each capable of existing as four virtual receivers, so you can have eight different radio feeds being demodulated at the same time. But, you know, that's the high end of the market. What you were talking about was something called RTL dongles. RTL dongles are based on a chipset for digital television in Europe. Because it was pumped out in the millions, the price per unit was so small that you could put it together in a little RTL dongle for a USB and, you know, $30. The problem is it's kind of designed for UHF. It's not really designed for HF, so that's one problem. You basically need a converter to get it to be able to be a little bit less depth on the HF band. But you also tend to need to find your own software. Now, there's a lot of great websites. I think it's called RTL.com, or if you just Google RTL SDR. There are a lot of websites, and they offer links to places where you can download free software. And it shouldn't be a big problem in getting it to work, sort of. Again, you'll have some limitations. It sort of depends upon what band you want to use for the RTL. But if you don't want to go, you know, at least expensive, there are intermediate versions of software-defined radios. Now, I always like to mention that there's a difference between a software-controlled radio and a software-defined radio. Most radios manufactured these days are software-controlled. In the old days, they had an RS-232 port, which allowed you to pump out ASCII code into the radio, and it would accept something called CIV command sequences, and that's how you would remotely control through your computer. Nowadays, a lot of times they've incorporated it into a more modern USB connector, and sometimes offer software that gives you a very nice visual interface with radio. But what you're really talking about is a software-defined radio. The big difference is it doesn't use any legacy components. There are no IF stages. There are no RF mixers. It's all basically done through, you feed the front end into an amplifier and a filter, put it through a sampler, you take the digital stream, and from then on, it's like a computer, you just manipulate the digital stream to do the audio filtering, the demodulating, and all the fun stuff. Let me see if I have a bunch of different pieces of software available, all of them being free, shareware. There are even programs, if you're interested in programming, they offer you little modules that you can kind of plug in software-wise and build your own piece of software that runs a software-defined radio. But I wouldn't suggest that to anyone starting out. There's more than enough. So, Chad, as far as I'm concerned, you might want to look at, I think it's, again, RTLSDR.com, but Google it to make sure, and they'll give you a laundry list of the different software that you could play with your RTL dongle that you have now, as long as you're looking for more of a UHF, VHF experience than an HF experience. Otherwise, there's a lot of companies that sell intermediate, like SDR Play, goes for about $100. Is a little bit better finished and wider bandwidth, has much better features, but, you know, you pay extra for that. If anyone out there has any other opinions about software-defined radios or any experience with RTL dongles or other variations on the theme, please hit the push-to-talk button. Say your piece.
Calling B2 Jackson.
Yes, Rich.
The British company that makes the intermediate box, I don't know exactly what the company is called, but the radios are RSP Duo, RSP Play, RSP DX. The latest one is the RSP DX. I think the RSP Plays have been discontinued.
Yeah, I've heard of them. Again, they're good intermediate level. They're not transmitters. They're only receivers, but Chet indicated he was more interested in playing around with the receiver part. So those are very good products either. I mean, the RTL dongle is really, if you're not really interested in spending almost any money, but you want to dabble in it. Otherwise, most people would not... would be somewhat disappointed by the signal-to-noise ratio, the sensitivity, and there's a bunch of other issues. But, you know, I mean, for $30, you can't go wrong as a little toy. But I agree with you, Rich, that that's a good product. There's a load of different companies kind of making those intermediate-priced software-defined radios out there. Anyone else with any history of playing around with these? I know Rich W2BZ had a RTL dongle for a while. I don't know if he's with us yet. Gosh, I hope that isn't you, Rich. You're 99.9% noise, unfortunately. Yeah, I could just hear you say something about your antenna, and then it went back to noise. I took the opportunity, though, to kind of Google, and it is, in fact, rtl-str.com. It's an excellent source for software and information. So if you didn't throw that RTL dongle out into the garbage, and you just want to brush it off and play around with it for a little while, that's as good as a toy to play with as any chip. Anyone else out there with any advice related to software-defined radios? Anyone looked into it much or bought one or is happy with theirs or unhappy with theirs? Again, you know, the RTL is more of an experimenter's kind of way of putting your big toe in the water. You know, if you like it, then you move on to the bigger boys, because you know, they cut a lot of corners, and it's really a repurposed digital television tuner. So that's my 2 cents worth on the RTL-SDR, and Rich GXM mentioned a few good models from one English manufacturer, and there are others around. You just Google SDR radios. You know, nowadays, the major manufacturers are sort of hiding SDRs behind chassis. The new 705 is basically, the MICOM is basically a software-defined radio. The 7300 of their model is also an SDR radio. So they're more every year, but they're going to be hidden behind old knobs and dials so that guys don't get intimidated by bit twiddling.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Sounding a lot better, Rich.
And WB2, KWC.
Can recognize as well. Rich, you wanted to say something?
I just found out that ham radios work better with antennas on them than without, so I guess that's the reason I'm sounding better. Yeah, the you can get just about plug-and-play software-defined radios, and that other fellow who mentioned the RSPs, I have an RSP-1A, I believe it is, and there are four or five beautiful and free software packages that you can use to manipulate the receiver. And again, it is a receiver only, but you can really get a feel for what SDR is with the line of RFPs and software like SDR Sharp. And boy, I've gone on to digital, so my head is already out of it. Roy knows how crazy I went with SDR stuff, but there are four or five pieces of free software out there that you can use to turn this little box, orange box, into a SDR receiver. Back to net.
Okay, very good, Rich. Ken, you wanted to say something.
Yes, I did. I had played a little bit with the SDR dongles from the folks at Nulek. It looks just like a little blue flash drive. I plugged it in. I used some software, mostly SDR Sharp, and was rather disappointed in the sensitivity of these devices. Perhaps if I had a better antenna than a piece of a random wire or a little 2-meter or 440 megahertz antenna, it would have worked better.
BZ?
Yeah, Rich recognized. Just one sec. Well, that manufacturer just clones the RTL SDR dongle. So that's one of the reasons why, unfortunately. It works best in UHF and the upper end of VHF. So, you know, if you were trying to pick up signals on those frequencies, you would find it a little bit more impressive. When you get it to HF frequencies, you just have to use a converter with it. Otherwise, it's a pointless exercise. But, Rich, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, the antenna requirements are no less stringent for a $5,000 ham radio, regular radio, than they are for a $100 SDR radio. The better antenna, the better the radio is going to perform. And mostly you'll find that you will be using it for the HF bands and below, or let's say the aircraft bands. I mean, it has a, mine goes, I forgot the specs now, mine goes, Roy, do you remember the range of the RSP-1A? It's it goes up to 2 gig, I think it's from 30 megacycles to 2 gig, go ahead.
I do not remember the exact specs for that model. I assume it's a heck of a lot better than those that are related to the RTL dongles. Those are very problematic. Most of the ones that sell for in the $100 plus range have better chipsets, and they have much wider spectrum. The limitation partially is due to the digital analog converting portion of the chipset, but there are other problems in that the bit length limits the signal strength, and you know, again, those RTL dongles are interesting playthings, but I wouldn't take them too seriously, unfortunately.
WA2CDO.
Hello, Andy.
Yeah, hi, Willie. I guess you got my message. I was, I've been on the phone. I'm taking this this course online, which I got to get out by tomorrow. I'm gonna have to. I can't take it. I can't do this. What am I trying to say? I can't do this right now. The, you know, the TechNet, because I got to finish this up. I don't know how long it's gonna take. So just go on, and if I get time, if I get this thing done, I will call you back. I hopefully it's not late, but because of the holiday, I didn't take it the course earlier this weekend, so I had to wait. So now that I have the time to do it. I got to do this. So just letting you know. All right. So excuse me for that, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, Andy. So I got your message, and hopefully later on you'll be available. If not, we'll do it some other week.
Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich. I'm looking up the specs, by the way, to the RSP-1A. They're kind of optimistic. They say it covers the spectrum from 1 kilohertz all the way up to 2 gigahertz and is able to display, which is also important, 10 megahertz bandwidth on a Panda adapted display, which is a very nice feature to have. You want to have a nice wide fan adapter. Some of the earlier radios that had pseudo fan adapters had very narrow spectrums that they showed. Usually they tap the IF of a legacy radio and they use that as a fan adapter. So that's something about the RSP-1A from SDR Play Radio Company. Yes, Rich, you want to say something?
But let me just sign out, Roy.
Yeah, sure, Andy. Please feel free.
All right, I'm actually multitasking. I'm on the phone too. All right, thanks. I'll try to come back later, but I won't sign in until I'm ready to sign in. See you later. Have a good time. W8CDO.
Okay, very good, Andy. Rich, you wanted to say something.
Yes, there's a great, very cheap antenna from China, and Roy would remember the model number better than I. It's all a magnetic loop. It's just receiving a that brought my RSP-1A to life. So for a whole $130, $150 maybe at the top of it, I had I have quite an SDR receiver, and it is the H1A. If Roy can't remember the model number for it, I will look it up and post it on my QRZ page. W2BZ back to net.
Okay, very good. I think it's called an MLA-30. It's a curious device. It uses, instead of a big tube of copper or aluminum, it uses a very thin, I think it's basically stainless steel wire loop. And it has the tuning equipment in a little sealed box. But I think its designation is MLA-30.
That is it. It's the MLA-30. Just look on eBay. They're all over the place for $30-$35, including shipping, and they work great with an RSP-1A or any of the other SDR little boxes that are made. I think now that the industry is maturing a little bit, when I say the industry, I mean the receiving, the cheap end of SDRs receive only, and the SDR Play Company with their line of RSPs are, hanging in there at about number one, I would say. So I would definitely call HRO and ask them the difference between their different models and see what you think you would need. And if you want to buy one of those, then buy the that magnetic loop from a cheap magnetic loop that has also gotten raves for something like that. W2BZ.
Okay, thank you very much, Rich. Chet, I hope you got enough stuff to get started on. As I mentioned before, if you still have that RTL dongle and you haven't totally given up on it, I would suggest you go to the website, you download some software, you play around with it, get a little sense of it. If you want something a lot more sensitive for HF, the SDR Play radios are a pretty good deal for the price. They're not as cheap as the RTL dongles or the clones of them, but they're very serviceable. And there's more than a few pieces of software that are designed to run all these, because they're basically written by people who sort of love the technology, and they release them as shareware.
KD2NVP.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, just I don't personally know much about it, but I'm just reminding people or letting people know that in the September issue of QSD is a product review, and the first thing they're reviewing is the SDR Play RSP-DX software-defined receiver, which is their latest model, according to this, and it goes for $200, but it's obviously, you know, it looks like it's got a lot of nice features. I did read the article. So just wanted to throw that out there. Back to that. This is KD2NVB.
Thanks, Bob. I think they have at least three models at this point. You know, some are kind of the bare bones. I think when it gets up to the one that's reviewed on in QST, I think that might be a dual receiving system. So it has kind of two receivers in one. So you can do interesting tricks with that as well. It has two antennas and such. So, you know, I mean, you could take a look. I suggest Google is always our friend, so Google the different manufacturers and look up the specs, see what kind of you think you'd like and what you think you don't like, and, you know, find out what it's going for, and it's loads of fun. I love software-defined radios. I enjoy the concept because, to me, it's a novelty. You got to keep in mind that most of the technology that's involved in the way our radios, our legacy radios work, were patented back in the 1910s to the 1920s. Edward Armstrong with Super Regenerative and Super Heterodyne and FM, all that was back then. So this is kind of an interesting new metaphor for radios, and I think it's going to be the future personally, but at the very least, you should take a look around it.
Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
Thanks for listening. They are, the future is here, and shortwave radios, regular shortwave radios with a regular dial on them, don't come close to what you can hear and find. I should say find, not hear, but find on a software-defined radio, you know, which includes the ham bands also. But there's a lot of other stuff on the spectrum, on the radio spectrum, other than ham radio that you can easily getting stuff. So it's not just for ham radio, it's for shortwave radio listening also. Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Well, I would agree with you, again, because you're preaching to the choir here. There are some people who love their dials and their meters and their indicator lights, and if you want that, that's perfectly fine, whatever metaphor you want. Again, ICOM made a point of designing software-defined radios that don't look anything like my SDR. It looks very much like a legacy radio. If you take a look at the 7300, the ICOM IC7300, except for it having an LCD display instead of mechanical dials and indicators, it looks very old-fashioned type of thing, but it's a software-defined radio. So, you know, whatever floats your boat. I am a big fan of software-defined radios and the idea of multiple virtual radios receiving simultaneously, of being able to capture bit streams, the I and Q data from an RF bit stream can be saved and then manipulated and demodulated later on from the recording. So there's a lot of flash forward and stuff. So it's loads of fun. I found it a lot of fun. SDRs. Some people won't touch an SDR. They really don't like the concept. They don't like looking at their signal. They like hearing their signal. So be it.
WB2AHK, coming back.
Yes, Chad.
Well, first, I don't know if anybody went up to Glen Oaks building and worked on the repeater, but tonight everybody's coming in good. No noise, no static. It's beautiful, it's wonderful. So if anybody worked on it, let me thank them for their efforts to get it up to snuff. I don't think these things fix themselves. Somebody must have done something. So it's great. Okay, what I'm looking for is something for my HF use. I run what I would call wideband audio, hi-fi audio on HF. And I get great accolades from people saying what great audio. But in the last month or so, I got two calls from two different amateurs says I'm wide, my frequency is wide. I'm going past the 3KC limits. And I don't want to interfere with anybody with my audio splattering out. So I wanted to be able to look at my signal on the PAN adapter display to see my bandwidth. And that's why I wanted to get something relatively cheap. I'm not saying $30, I don't mind spending $100, $150. So I can look at my signal to make sure it's up to snuff and stays within the confines of the 3KC band. So that's what I was looking for. Go ahead.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
All right, good evening, everybody. Good evening, Chet. And you can do it for free. There are websites that you can go on which have the radios, and you just use your computer and you log in to the website. Not even log in, just go to it. And you'll have a virtual SDR receiver located remotely, and you can listen to your own signal. And you can see your own signal on the PAN adapter. Now, there might be a half second or a quarter second delay, so what? I do it all the time. There's a station, I think it's in Pennsylvania. I think you're a 160 guy and an 80 guy, primarily. And you can do that, and I can send you the information if you need it. And you can monitor your own signal with your laptop or your desktop. And you'll see it on the PAN adapter, and you can see how wide it is.
RMD?
All right, let me answer that question first. Thanks, Lou. Would you send me that? I'm on 40. I'm off 160. And 95% 40 now. I love the band. Doing really good on it. And I don't want to get any calls from anybody that I'm, splattering or something. I want to keep my signal as clean as possible. I'll do that. If you could send me the information, I know you have my email address. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Lou. Okay, so I think there's another station that just called in. WB2AHK.
Yeah, let me just see if I have it again. Yeah, Chet, if you want, we can do it over the phone. And I can, direct you. No problem. Yeah, I'm on 40 a lot also. Mostly on CW, but let me know. I mean, you want to do it now or you want to do it another time. You can get on the horn and this way I walk you through it. Better than an email.
Okay, not tonight because I'm shut down for the night on HF. When I'm ready to do that. I really would like to have it all the time, though, able to look at it as I'm transmitting on 40. I'd like to have, the hardware so I can keep an eye on my signal and rather than just dialing into a website or something like that. I really would like to have, I have a spare laptop, and if I had that box, if it's an RSC-1A, whatever it is, and it's connected to my laptop, I'd be able to look at it all the time as I'm operating and then readjusting my audio levels and so on to keep out of trouble. I do not want to cause any splatter. So I would really like to have it in-house, but we'll see what happens. But if somebody could suggest something just for HF that I could keep an eye on my signal, and it's within $150 or less, that would be right in my area. So, okay, back to net control. Let Roy handle it before I send it to somebody else, because Roy is net control. Take it away, Roy, WB2AHK.
Okay, thank you very much, Chad. Well, Lou had a great idea. There is a website. It's very easy to get to. It's just called WebSCR.org. So if you type in WebSCR.org, it gives you a laundry list of worldwide SCRs that you can access by clicking the link and, you know, find one that's within the range of your signal. Take a look. But otherwise, if you want to have something in the shack, and again, you want to play around with the future technology, again, the models that were brought up earlier are probably a good price point for you. So think of those, look it up, see what you see about it. But just in case, you want to also take a look at the WebSCR.org, and you'll be able to look at all the signals.
ED2RMD?
Yes, RMD.
Good evening, Roy. Good evening to the net. KD2RMD, Russell and Corum. Kilo 3, Foxtrot Echo, Foxtrot.com. Kilo 3, Foxtrot Echo, Foxtrot.com. That's the website. I use it pretty much every day. In fact, that website has become a staple of my HF operating. And the station is in the Pocono section of Pennsylvania. Just keep in mind, you have to have conditions to where that station is in order to see your own signal, which at 160 and 80 meters is easy. I can get on 80 meters every day, and I can see my own signal on that website. But on 40 meters, it's rare to have the short conditions on 40 meters. At 20 meters, it never happens. One time, it happens. So just keep in mind, you need to have conditions to that station so you can view your own signal. And it's quite fascinating, actually. And you can even use that to your advantage to make some contacts that are in the mud that you wouldn't normally hear or would have difficulty hearing. You just turn the radio, the volume down on your radio, turn the volume up on your... Great way to operate. KD2RMD.
Okay, thank you very much, Russell. Yeah, you're quite right. I believe that's the sixth website that's listed on WebSCR.org. But yeah, it's a good place to kind of go to. It gives you a nice idea. It's all over the world. You can see what kind of transmissions are going on and signal activity in different regions. You know, it's just another thing to take a look at.
During field day, I was calling CQ on 80 meters, and there was a station, I never seen this before, but he had a 9 kilohertz wide single sideband transmission, 9 kilohertz wide. And I came very close to actually yelling at the guy, because there I was working like a small pile up on field day, and this man is 8 kilohertz away, and yet he was bleeding into my frequency. All right, KD2RMD, back to net.
NY2H with a comment.
Yes, Lou.
Right, and if the Pocono station doesn't work because it's too close, then you've got one in D.C. You know, you got a smattering of them. And WebSCR.org is not the only site. There's one or two other sites that basically do the same thing with other receivers. So generally, you can find something right in the zone. You know, so you could probably find something for 40 also.
Okay, very good, Lou. Yeah, there are other places. I mean, if you just kind of Google SDRs and websites and such, I'm sure there are individual sites that will pop up as well. And getting back to Russell's comment, gee, 9 kilohertz, that's a heck of a lot of extended single sideband. I mean, I've heard of extended single sideband, but usually the worst I've ever seen are guys running about twice the bandwidth, you know, 6 kilohertz. You know, 9 is kind of absurd. I mean, what the hell is this guy transmitting? Bird music? Oh, well, once again, this is AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Anyone else has any comments about predefined radios, WebSDR, checking fan adapters, what have you, please feel free.
WB2KWC.
Yes, Cam.
Okay. Yeah, we talk about software-defined radios. I'd like to put in a word for the other type of radio you mentioned, software-controlled radios. I've got the IC7300, which is software-defined and software-controlled. I use the CIV command. I've written a little code and, you know, been able to make it do exactly what I want with just a click of a mouse on a single button, and had presented it at one of the online Limark meetings. I'm going to guess that in a few years you won't even have to write the code, but you can kind of build your radio out of the building blocks by just dragging and dropping little pieces of software around, and you won't even know it's software. It'll just be, hey, this is a frequency control. You can say, okay, dial up this frequency. This is a button. When I click on this button, go to AM. So we're going to see interesting things as computers become more and more integral parts of our radios.
Well, Ken, I hope so. You know, CIV codes, I think, have been at least around for 20 years. I remember the TS-2000, which was a very popular radio about 10 years ago, had an RS-232 and had CIV. So for the most part, HF radios, as far as I'm aware, any of them that are made these days, they have some form of computer control. Usually they don't do that for standard 2-meter, 70-centimeter rigs. Some do, some don't, but a lot of times they leave that stuff out. But yeah, it's very interesting, and theoretically you could do, to a degree, that's what SDR Sharp kind of does for software-defined radios. They're in modules, and you can plug them together and get them to do things depending upon how you arrange them and what your hardware is capable of. It would be interesting to see if people do that, kind of build your own radio in software. Just for controlling, or whether people will just depend on other people to whip something up. There's a lot of guys out there, mom and pop companies, there's a guy who makes Pegasus. That's an interesting computer controlled software. There's more than a few mom and pop shops that are doing that type of programming. It'd be interesting if they release a kit.
You know, I've written a little interface library to my IC7300, so basically it's quite easy from, you know, C-sharp or the language I'm using to just say, okay, tune to this frequency, and I give it the frequency in, I think I give it to it in hertz, whatever, and it's done. If we have any programmers on the list, I'm on the net, and I'm certainly willing to make it available at no cost if you want to tinker.
Very good, Ken. I'm sure there are guys out there who would love to tinker. And the 7300 is probably the most popular radio on HF these days. Almost every other person that I end up talking to on HF has either bought a 7300 or is planning to buy a 7300, so that would be useful. My Flex actually has its own set of APIs, so you can inject through the Ethernet command and get it to do all kinds of fun stuff. So it's very flexible that way. And I don't know if there'll be a lot of computers that have API hooks. I think most of them are still going to rely on CIV commands, which work just as well.
Yeah, but It's quite easy to take these CIV commands and basically wrap an API around them. And so as far as all your software is talking to is the API, and it's not aware of the underlying infrastructure. It's also why programs like, let's say, WSJT for FT8, you just have a little drop-down. You tell it what radio, and it uses a library which has wrapped an interface around the particular commands for that radio.
Yeah, it's great how everything is starting to actually talk to each other. There's a lot of radios that actually can respond to a rather generic CIV command set. I know my Plex is a little bit esoteric because it has 8 virtual radio receivers, and CIV is not really written for something like that. So usually when people are using programs to interact with a Plex, they usually are told to set it to a Kenwood TS-2000. You know, the CIV codes are pretty much the same.
Okay, I don't know the Plex radios. I would think that all you'd have to do is put in, you know, a single parameter which says, you know, I'm talking to Radio 5, I'm talking to Radio 8, but not familiar enough with it to be able to say definitively. Anyhow, this is not the computer net. Let me turn it back over to you for TechNet stuff.
Okay, doke. Thank you, Ken. This is the technical net, the science net, the space report net. It's a lot of nets. Once again, I am AC2GS. If anyone has any questions or topics for tonight, because we got a lot of free time here, please give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2RMD.
Yes, Russell.
So I finished building a four-element, two-meter Yagi just the other day. I started it about a half ago. I finished it the other day. And the best I can get after tuning and moving the elements around is about a 1.8 to a 2.3 SWR. Depending on where I point the beam, the SWR does change slightly, and which is really not all that bad, but my radio, my IC746, full back power, once it starts to see a 1.5, then by a 2.0 SWR, it falls back half power. So if I'm at a 3 SWR, I'm only putting out about 20 watts, 20, 30 watts. And the end working, because before I even started tuning it, I had a QSO with the Connecticut station that was exactly 77 miles away, direct line of sight. So I'm doing something right. What I didn't do was do any elaborate matching networks. I just did a direct feed connection with the coax to the driven element. So when I got home from work today, I made another driven element, and I made a hairpin match. Now, my question is, without any instrumentation to do testing, if you wanted to make a four-element, two-meter Yagi with a hairpin match, how long would you make that hairpin? I started with 12 inches, and then after I bent it and then connected it, it was down to about 8 inches, which looked, eyeballing it, it looked small to me. So I made another one 14 inches. So I think a foot of wire for the hairpin is, from looking at pictures, it's about what the size is. So I'm just wondering, am I in the ballpark? Go ahead.
Okay, I've never really worked with those antennas. You do need some kind of a match, because the parasitic elements are going to perturb the impedance of the driven element. But I don't know exactly what dimension. You know, the best approach in my mind would be to make it long and then fit it in with some kind of a clamp that you could then adjust the point of inserting the signal into.
What I figured, I couldn't really find anything to make a temporary connection, so I did go ahead and solder it. But I'm going to give that, I'm going to give it a try in the morning when I get home from work. And I'm pretty optimistic that it's going to perform better, because we hairpin and just the direct feed, it was working. It's, you know, it's just, it does, I did need to manipulate that feed point and feed it somewhat. So I figured, you know, 12 inches of wire to make the hairpin would be, should be about right. Just by looking at some on pictures and what I, online. And I had the ARRL handbook, and I read thoroughly the transmission line and impedance transformation chapter, and I couldn't get any specific dimensions for a hairpin. I think one time across people suggesting on the oil 12 inches, so I just wanted to see if that's right. But I'll let everyone know how it turns out. And I will say, I pointed that beam at the Selden repeater, and my ground plane, I received the Selden repeater at an S9. I pointed that beam at it, and it was 30 over. So my first experience is with, I'm wondering why I waited so long.
WB2KWC?
Yes, Cap.
Okay, the comment that the SWR is from 1.8 to 2.3, depending on the direction it's pointed, kind of makes me wonder, is the SWR issues your antenna, or is it the environment that it's in, that you're coupling to another piece of metal somewhere in the environment, rather than having a problem with the antenna?
The antenna is close to the house. I live in a condo, and my little porch right outside my front door, it's only about 10 feet by 12 feet. So it's a little bit of both going on, because there was a few times that I pointed the antenna in one area, and my SWR was down to about a 1.7, 1.8, and I was putting out about 75 watts. And I was like, okay, it's working well, I'm happy. I shut everything down. I put the antenna back up later on in the day, and the SWR changed. But it's not changing dramatically, but it is, I think it is interacting with the metal gutter, or the fact that the reflector is, I try not to point the reflector at the house. At, you know what, I have to describe the dimensions, but it's close. So I do the best that I can.
Okay, very good, Russell. As I mentioned before, if you could pick up a small hose clamp, those things usually work nicely. You put a piece of that wire there, and you can slide it across the element that you bent, that's about a foot long, you say, and kind of fine tune it for the best impedance in your circumstances.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. I appreciate the comments. And just final, all this talk about VHF and all the digital modes out there. Don't forget, weak signal work, it can be fun on our 2 meters as well. All right, back to Ned.
Yes, indeed, Russell. There's a place for every little portion of amateur radio, and there are people out there, especially hopefully with Yaggies like you have, who were doing, you know, single sideband up there on 2 meters, and we wish them well. A couple of weeks ago, there was a lot of tropospheric dusting and a lot of people getting across relatively big distances. So have fun, enjoy, Russell. Once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2, Gulf Sierra. Roy here, net control operator for this Hawaii Mark technical mess. We meet here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. And if you have any questions or topics you would like to discuss tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Katie, Toro GB Mobile.
Yes, Craig, how are you this fine night?
I'm doing pretty well on the Southern Parkway. Got a nice little question in terms of illuminator nights, lights on the vehicle.
Okay, I'm not a real specialist in illuminator lights on automobiles, but you can throw it out and we'll see if we can get an answer for you.
Recently when I went over a small bump, the electronic stability light, I believe, it basically shows a car and a couple of skids behind it. It flashed for about maybe a second or two when I went over it, and then it just went out. I assume that is normal because I went over a bump. Is that correct?
Well, again, that's out of my purview, but if anyone out there would like to answer Craig's question, please feel free.
W2ASC.
Yes, ASC.
Yeah, it sounds like he triggered the electronic stability, but the indicator light was just showing that you lost traction for a second, and that's totally normal from what I can see.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Makes sense to you, Craig?
All right, very good. I actually just had it come on a few minutes ago. It actually came on solid for about 5 or 6 seconds, and that's because I was still holding the brakes while moving it fully at full speed, but not pressed in enough to like make the car slow down, but enough to make the brake lights come on. And it ended up beeping just once, came on solid for like a few seconds, and then as soon as I let go of the brakes, about 3 seconds later, it went out.
Okay, probably not something you should get to the habit of doing, but okay.
And I was just wondering, because I once had it come on for a second right after starting up, but if sometimes the vehicle is moving, but I'm sometimes still, like, on the brake, like, pressed in just to make the lights come on, but not, like, to actually slow it down, somehow it popped up. I don't see why, but I figure I'd just ask that, too.
Okay, any other comments about this amongst other listeners on the technical net? Okay, very good. Well, once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. If you have a technical question or a topic or a comment or something of a technical nature to discuss, please give me your first name and your call sign tonight. Okay, let's try a puzzle. I think everyone knows that one of the ways in science fiction they discuss the distance between things is they call things light years. That's the distance that light travels in a vacuum in 1 year. So my puzzle for tonight is, what kind of a year do you think most people are talking about when they call them light years? Because there are different types of years. There are sidereal years, there are seasonal years, there are Chinese years, there are Jewish years. We just came up with a Jewish New Year. So what kind of a year do people have in mind when they describe things being in the distance of light years?
KD2NBB.
Yes, Bob.
Oh, Roy, I think it's just the actual time the Earth takes to travel around the sun, so it's that, you know, that exact figure, whatever, roughly 365 and a quarter days, Earth days. That's what I think it is. So that's my answer. Back to that, KD2MEV.
WP2EAV.
Yes, Ed.
I didn't catch who the previous station was, but I agree with him. But I have to ask you a question. What do you have that's a standard of reference that's accurate enough to make decide which one you want to use, because everything, I mean, I believe the closest object to us that's more than a fraction of a light year away is like 4 light years away. So what exactly do you have that's accurate enough for it to really matter?
I don't have an actual location. I just have a definition for what a light year is.
John NTD2 OGB Mobile.
Yes, Greg?
Now on Selden. Are you talking about a light year in terms of the distance of miles